And we're back, We the People Radio.
Well, I should have hummed a few bars.
That's all right.
A little computer problems.
That's all right.
This morning.
You're joining Aaron Ryan, Elizabeth Woodward, Bob Martin, and we're going to jump right to Stephen Greenhut. We're going to talk a little bit about the militarization of our local police forces. And there was an article by Radley Balco in Salon that talks about the overwhelming paramilitary force that is on the rise in the United States. And very quickly, if you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you can find out everything about Stephen Greenhut. But currently, he is the vice president with the Franklin Center, and he is... Hello? Oh, yeah. And he's actually, he just is starting a new position on July 22nd as a Sacramento-based California columnist for the Union Tribune in San Diego. So are you in there, Stephen?
I'm right here.
Hey, thanks for hanging on. Yeah, we can hear you. Hey, listen, we've got this this article in Salon, an online magazine, and they're talking about the rise of paramilitary force in the United States, and you were quoted in the article as being a little bit disappointed with the position that the right has taken in siding with the police. So what's your take on this?
Well, first, it's Radley Balco. It's from his new book, Rise of the Warrior Cop, which I haven't read yet, but Radley's an excellent reporter and been covering these issues for a long time. And I was, I think he quoted from a piece I had written after the pepper spraying of the occupiers in Davis. And I had, naively expected that people on the right might have, been sympathetic with the protesters, even if they don't like what the protesters are saying, because this whole police militarization issue has been, I think, is a big issue that affects everyone on the left, right, everywhere. I see it everywhere. I saw it in my years of writing at the Orange County Register. I still do a column for the Register, and I used to report down there on the editorial page, and it became just a major issue, constant, where police take a highly militarized approach to everything and shoot people that I can't, I've got to see a lot of these cases up close and personal and deal with the police and the sheriff's department and the DAs, and it's just, it's unbelievable. And it's scary. So anyway, he quoted me from a piece I wrote about how inconsistent conservatives are. They could find themselves on the receipt just as easily, and have many times, by the way, found themselves on the receiving end of these sorts of things. And So anyway, that's what he quoted me from. It was a piece I wrote about that.
Well, anybody who's watching, it really struck me in Boston. That That really, I watched people get just pulled out of their own houses. You know, knock, 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 we're looking for the terrorist. All right, get out with your hands up and stand on your front lawn. And I'm thinking, what?
Well, and there's a real increase in police, local police forces, shooting people's dogs.
I know, that's a biggie too. Amy brought that out in the article.
Huge.
He said, if you want to really get people involved, shoot their dog.
Yeah. So
yeah, there's a big case. People are protesting, I think, down in Hawthorne over a case, and L.A. County Deputy Sheriff, the Sheriff's Department had issued a new policy. It's been happening so with such frequency. I think what happens is police go on these calls, and they're all ramped up and being extremely aggressive, and they can shoot a dog without any problem at all. I covered one of those in Costa Mesa where the officer claimed that the dog, this is just typical. Okay, the police officer sees two teenagers riding their bicycles without helmets. So he goes up to them and they ride away. So he chases them into their backyard, pulls a weapon on the kids. And then the dog comes out and starts barking like crazy. So he shoots the dog, and then the officer claims that the dog attacked him, but he threw away his pants and his belt where the dog supposedly bit him. So this is modern policing.
And you know, the sad part is that it seems to be that regardless of what severe action police forces are taking against ordinary citizens, they never really seem to be held accountable. I really do believe they protect their own.
Yeah, that article really pointed that out, all the different things that happened, and it was kind of like, oh, well, this is the price of safety.
So why do you think that... Why do you think it's on the rise, Stephen?
Well, you know, first off, on that issue, I never see accountability, ever. I mean, on these cases, it doesn't matter how heinous, it's you have a variety of things. There are all sorts of, police will say that they are, they have all sorts of oversight, and it's true that there are all sorts of panels and oversight type of, procedures, but none of them provide real oversight. And because they're all run by each other. So for instance, a case I was writing about in Orange County with our sheriff, Mike Corona, who now, by the way, is still serving his 6-year federal corruption sentence. So anyway, but there was a guy in a jail, and he was beaten to death, tortured, and murdered for 50 minutes right outside of the guard station. And this is in a jail. So there's not like something like this could happen without anybody noticing. Well, the sheriff's deputies and their deputies who patrol the jail in Orange County, they said they didn't see what was happening because they were watching television sleeping. So, which is not very encouraging in and of itself. But it took, what seemed likely
that's another story.
What seemed likely happened, it was they knew what was going on, probably, allegedly, and put, the shot callers in the jail up to beating this guy, and they got carried away and they killed him. So then the district attorney, who is fairly worthless and very much of a supporter of anything police did, he finally puts out a investigation, a report about it, and it was just outrageous. The internal affairs investigators were coaching the accused police, the accused deputies, all manner of corruption. And what happened? Nothing. Nobody was prosecuted. A few people, retired. And then they're not allowed to tell us what the discipline is, thanks to a variety of laws and a Supreme Court ruling, the Copley decision down in San Diego. So any sort of police disciplinary action is just considered an internal matter. We have no right to know whether your local police officer has shot multiple people, has been accused of all sorts of wrongdoing. So the reason for this, so this is completely typical, even in a heinous situation like that, a torture murder, where the police officers admit that they were goofing off, and where the district attorney finds that there was actual corruption, nothing happens to these folks. And in many times, it's true. I see they get promoted after they're accused of wrongdoing. It's kind of the police department's way of saying we don't care what you think. I mean, in a case in Fullerton, Kelly Thomas, the homeless man, was beaten to death by police officers. It was all caught on video. It's a horrifying thing. The police were allowed to watch the video and get their story straight before testifying. And this was before the video was released. So this is the kind of every manner of excuse, privilege, every sort of thing that if any normal citizen is not allowed to have. So this is the way it works. And then the culture of police departments, they protect one another. They have a paramilitary view of the world, and they protect each other. And the culture encourages it. Another case I reported on, this also in Orange County, because I was, down at the register, so that's why a lot of these are from Orange County. There was a guy, he was being prosecuted by the DA, a deputy, for torturing a guy with a taser in the back of the guy was restrained, he was in the back of the police car, and he was repeatedly tasering him, and the guys in the locker room were laughing about that. The other police officers thought that was funny, and that's how the DA got wind of it. He prosecuted it. They got the deputies one at a time, and they told them what happened. Then when they got to the case, everybody changed their story. So this is absolutely, completely common. The other thing is, most of the things that are so horrific in the Bradley Barco article and some of the things I've written about that are so horrific. Police shooting unarmed people, raiding the wrong house, killing dogs, whatever. None of that's illegal. So the way the law is if the police in any way believe their life was in danger, they're allowed to use deadly force. So there's not even anything to do to discipline them, because the law is written in such a way that they could do anything they want. They could break into your studio right now and say they got a tip that you know, you were going to do something. So, and they shoot you, and they say, well, I thought, you know, when she reached for that pen, I thought she was going to kill me. And then that's the end of it. There would be an investigation, and they'll be cleared and back on the street, probably promoted.
Okay, this is more than frightening.
Well, so there's, I mean, okay, there should be a happy balance somewhere in this, but as we're letting out more, especially in California, letting out more prisoners, you know, as all this stuff is ramping up, the tools of the trade are getting more more military style too.
Well, it's true. Let's look at why. First off, why are they releasing prisoners? Because Jerry Brown is so cozy with the police unions that he with the prison guards unions that he refuses to do some of the things that would allow us to, you know, there's so many people in jail there for drug offenses and things they shouldn't even be there for jail for, right? I mean, we have in prison, we have so many, you know, crimes that shouldn't even be crimes.
And the problem is they come out with more knowledge on different types of crimes.
Well, right. I mean, is it sensible to put you know, drug users in jail, but all these mandatory minimum sentences and then, you know, three strikes, which, you know, we're all for putting, really bad people away. But, you know, a lot of, take a look at some of the strikes that have landed people in jail, if you take a look at that, I mean, you start filling that, you fill up the prisons with a lot of people who shouldn't be there. And of course, it costs in California almost $50,000 a year per prisoner, which is the highest in the nation. And you've got the Prison Guards Union, which has historically lobbied for more of these tough on crime type of sentencing deals. It's good for business. And Jerry Brown, who's rather stand down, pretend he's George Wallace, and stand in the cell, standing down federal judges than impose the kind of reforms that are necessary. But here's, you know, there's a case right now going on in Henderson, Nevada, where I think Balco refers to this, where, it's probably not in the book because this just happened, but anyway, I think he's written about it. A police came and commandeered these people's house. They came in and they insisted, they came and took over the house so that they could watch the neighbors in a domestic dispute. So you were talking before about Fourth Amendment. Well, this is a Third Amendment, right?
Wow.
Drawing and quartering soldiers, military are soldiers, in the houses. That's outrageous, right? I mean, I find that to be just unbelievably outrageous. You know, I saw Balco was just this morning. I was looking online, and he had a piece where on Salon also, where he said when police get SWAT teams, they want to use them. And I remember I did an interview at the in Orange County again. There's the county jail where all this horrible things happen, and including the John Chamberlain murder, which you could, you know, read about that on your own and look up the DA's report. But right next door. It's the Santa Ana City Jail. And the city jail houses just as difficult prisoners as the county jail. And the city jail, they even have, you know, Mexican mafia members and all, because they contract with the feds for some pretty tough prisoners. And the city jail is run more like a community college. I went in, you know, when you go in the county jail, it looks like something from, one of those bad prison break movies. And you go into the city jail, and you think you're in a kind of cheap community college. That's what it looks like. There's one officer surrounded by often a female and always unarmed officer surrounded by inmates there. And it's the least threatening, one of the least threatening environments I've ever seen. And anyway, it's a privatized jail. It's run not in the traditional manner. And they've had very few disturbances. I think only one in the history of it. And the guy who runs it was telling me that they do not have a SWAT team at the jail, and that the one time he was at a place where they had a SWAT team, they used it within the first few hours that they started at the jail version of a SWAT team. I forget what it's called. And that was his point, that when you give them all this equipment and you train them to be militarized and you create a SWAT team, these guys can't wait to use it. They want to do that. And that's, I think, what's happening. Every community is getting a SWAT team, and the officers, the departments are eager to use those SWAT teams. And this is pervading the whole mentality. The day of the community cop is over. I mean, I tell my kids, I said, you beware of police officers. I mean,
and how sad is that? You've got criminals on one side, and you've got police force on the other side, and we're all stuck in the middle, and we can't trust any of them.
I find the police are far more terrifying than many of the criminals, mm-hmm. because they can do things with impunity that I've seen, and it's just terrible. I mean, obviously, we want to deal with serious criminals.
You live in a police state when you see a police car behind you, and your heart stops beating. And instead of seeing a police officer as a friendly person who's going to assist you as a public servant, you view them with fear.
Well, it's true. You know what? And I'm not, you know, ever defending criminal behavior at all, but a lot of times, why do you think some of these, you know, young inner-city teens, when they're stopped by a cop, why do you think they run?
Sure.
Because they know what's happened to some of their other friends where they're stopped by a police officer, and then they run, and then the police shoot them, or they, you know, I don't know. I've just seen, there was one case, and I could go on. You can see I wrote quite a few of articles about this case in Huntington Beach, where a young troubled girl with a small knife was in an empty park at like 4 a.m. and surrounded by officers, so they riddled her with bullets. They shot her to death.
Oh, jeez.
These kind of things just happen over and over, and nobody wants to so there's some discussion about whether the police committed a crime after these things happen, like the one in, these cops in Fullerton are being prosecuted for beating to death Kelly Thomas, which is a rarity. They never, very rarely get prosecuted. But nobody wants to talk about the terms of engagement and when it's appropriate to use force. And if you look at the police officers, how they dress and how they behave, increasingly, you don't see that kind of, community officer. You see this very militarized, figure. And you see this everywhere, right? You see it at, even when there's no real disturbance, when you're at a July 4th park event and you see, police lined up in their SWAT type gear everywhere. And, that's the kind of stuff that really makes me feel like we live in a police state.
Stephen, in any local community across the country, how does your local police force work with the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, any of these other agencies that might have local offices? Do they work together? Do they work against each other?
You know, I've not been involved in how the specifics, how the interactions work. I know, I do think that one of the arguments, you know, I've made and others have made is that increasingly local departments are getting equipment. We see that. They're getting a lot of the policy is probably driven from the federal government anymore, and that probably explains some of the behavior and the rules come. I think there's more involvement than there had been perhaps from the federal government, but I can't speak to how exactly it works. I mean, I know,
sure.
You know, you have all these interagency deals and all. But I do know that the attitudes of the average police officer are far different. There's this sense that it's us against them, and we're the them, and that at any minute a really good person to talk to to talk with or to read is Joe McNamara. He's the former San Jose police chief, former Kansas City police chief. He was the guy Giuliani wanted to be the police chief in New York. He's now at Hoover Institution at Stanford. So they're highly credible person, and he talks about how militarized the police have become and how they've increasingly exaggerate the danger that they face, and that's kind of the justification. And then you combine that with this, after 9/11 and some, I think, the overreactions that so many of us, so many Americans embraced after about terrorism. So that this is where we are. I have no idea what you do about it. We also see it at other levels. You know, this is, I go down to the American River to take a raft ride, and there's a park officer armed, searching our things to make sure we don't have beer. In my day, you should have been a requirement to have beer when you're floating on a river.
Exactly. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah.
I go into the post
office. Our beer had its own raft.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah. That's what it's going to be. I go into the post office in downtown Sacramento, and it's a federal building above it. So you have to, it's like going into the airport. You've got these surly guards there, and you have to put all your stuff through the X-ray machine in order to buy a stamp. And I'm standing next to a guy. He goes on the wall in this Soviet-esque looking post office. He goes and takes a picture of the Constitution. And the guards go and they go and they harass him because he's taking a picture in this building, and he thought it was ironic. He's taking a picture of this Constitution and being harassed for doing that. And but we're just getting used to that everywhere we go. You go to parks, you go to police. I saw a police officer in downtown Sacramento on horseback, chasing down and really rousting a guy who jaywalked. So just think about what our society would be like if all our laws were enforced.
It
would be a police state. So I don't know. Something needs to be done. I'm going on and on, but
no, that's all right. That's why we called you. Well,
but at the Capitol, though, the police unions—they control. I mean, they're certainly among the most powerful forces up there. And I've been in hearings where there's efforts to open some of the records of misbehaving police officers. It's just never going to happen. The Democrats and the Republicans are completely, the Democrats are, they love unions and the Republicans love law and order. So we're stuck. We're stuck with this nonsense.
Wow. Well, it's interesting because there are more and more. We linked one of them for a 4th of July DUI checkpoint where I think it's kind of, that's a young guy. I mean, it's kind of a kid. Has a camera on his, probably like the armrest in his car, or maybe sitting on the passenger seat. And he doesn't roll the window down very far.
Mm-hmm.
And the cop's like, roll your window down. He goes, I can hear you. Did I do something wrong? The guy's like, roll your window down. And it just escalates into this ridiculous confrontation where he didn't do anything.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There are tons of
that's what I see these days. The police, instead of they almost want a confrontation. Again, when I speak of this, obviously there are many who do not, and many officers who behave well and responsibly. But the fact is, the culture has changed, and the policies have changed, and it's become much more bureaucratic and much less leeway, from what I see, for the officer to be human and humane. And if the person gets within 11 feet of you, you can do this, and you can draw your weapon and do that. It's very bureaucratic, and I do think they hire an increasing number of officers who want to ratchet things up. I've seen it myself, and in situations I've been in, perfectly innocent situations, how the police have behaved to me, and it's pretty frightening. It seems as if their goal is to get me as mad as possible so that I can act out, so that they could then use force. That's what it seems like.
So it used to be that you got into, you wanted to be a police officer to help your local community, the one you grew up in, and now you join if you want to be a tough guy.
Yeah,
and you want
obviously
that big pension. You want the big pension, too.
Oh, yeah, there is that. That's another,
well,
that's another show.
You know, obviously, our sheriff's office is the, is the linchpin on this whole thing. because our, I mean, the ones that are really militarized, it isn't so much city police that I see that are really throwing their weight around, but out here, what we see is Forest Service cops and the
fishing game.
Yeah, and that's gotten a lot better, actually, in the last couple of years. That's actually kind of become a little bit of a non-issue just because they have a good boss who, you know, keeps things in line. But, yeah, different agencies that are really, you know, they want to be law enforcement, but they really aren't.
Yeah.
Well, they are increasingly, and that's the other thing we see is laws, they're continuing pushing laws to give, like, in one that passed gave code enforcement officers the power of peace officers, different things. So many of these agencies, you know, university security guards are not security guards. They're you know, legal police officers in the state of California. So there's this ratcheting up of powers and police powers and protections. But I think the point you made was that, you know, under good leadership, some of these issues, you know, can be dealt with better. I mean, I think a lot of the problem is, you know, a cultural problem. And somehow, you know, and it's driven by laws, a lot of them federal and state laws, and special protections, and a cultural issue. So what I basically am calling for is just more, you know, a cultural change. And the best way to start is to discuss these issues and the proper use of force and the proper behavior of community officers who are, in fact, they're not military. They're, you know, they are, civilian officers who are meant to patrol our communities. And there has been pushes for, you know, community policing in inner city neighborhoods and things such as that that have improved the situation in some places. But overall, I think Balco's book certainly touches on this big big problem that needs to be addressed.
And, you know, Stephen, I wanted to throw out your websites before we go. If you want to find out more about Stephen Greenhut or read more of his articles, go to humanevents.com or flashreport.org. And, again, all this information is on wethepeopleradio.us.
Yeah, and check out watchdog.org, which is the Franklin Center investigative site. And anyway, that's
and this
all
is,
right. Well, thanks for having
hey,
me.
Hey, thanks a lot.
It.
And this is your third time on this show. So if you want to hear more about what Stephen and Aaron and I have talked about, there are links to the two previous dates.
Yep. Look at the archives. Thank you very much. We always need our updates on what's going on in the libertarian world. You have lots of fans.
Thanks, Stephen.
Okay. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you very much. All right. We're going to take a quick break here. We're going to thank our advertisers.